That is the overture to the original Broadway production, or I should say recording of the original Broadway production of Lerner and Loewe's wonderful musical, My Fair Lady. And Franz Ahlers, I believe, was conducting there, who was one of the numerous award winners for that when it first opened on Broadway. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. Good afternoon, I'm Kevin Kelly. And today's program is all about My Fair Lady, specifically the production by the University of Illinois School of Music Opera Program, which opens it on Thursday, that's tomorrow, for a show at 7:30, Friday, Saturday as well. And then there's a 2:30 or 3 o'clock. What time is it on Sunday?
3 o'clock.
3 o'clock matinee. All of it happening at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts on the university campus in Urbana. And we have with us the artistic and music director of the opera program and also principal conductor, Eduardo Diaz-Munoz, and the stage director for this production, who's also on the voice faculty at the School of Music, Ricardo Herrera. Herrera, I got to roll the first two R's in the last name. And several cast members from the production who we'll introduce as we go along. Let's introduce Eduardo Diaz-Munoz, who's been on the show a number of times for various opera program, opera productions. This year, kind of an interesting season. You're continuing the presentation of operas by a late colleague of yours. And then continuing with this one, a little bit unusual because it's going to be a semi-staged concert version. First, let me ask about the first opera. How did it go?
Extremely well. Well, first of all, thank you very much, Kevin, for having us
Thanks for coming in.
Florencia del Amazonas, it went very well.
Daniel Catán,
right. He's chronologically his second opera. And as I shared with you when you kindly had us here in February 2009, the plan is to present here for our audiences in Champaign-Urbana all of his completed operas. So we're halfway through. So the next one will be Sal Si Puedes, and the last one, Il Postino, who has been a tremendous success. But we'll go one step at a time. I don't want to be regarded as a complete and crazy fan of his music, although I am, but I have to pace it. So because even though his language is very post-romantic, impressionistic, and so forth, I think that the audience needs also some time to digest, so to speak, what he has to say. And all of his stories are very intense, very surreal. But thanks for asking. It went pretty well.
Well, we didn't get to talk about it. I don't remember what happened, but we didn't get to have you guys on the show about that one, and so really didn't get the overview of the season. It, as I said, it's an unusual season. This one, My Fair Lady, of course, generally thought of as musical theater. It's on an opera program, and then I think you're doing the Threepenny Opera of Kurt Weill.
Correct.
Later, not your usual sort of opera. So maybe just before we launch into this one. How did this season take shape? And
well, I have been thinking at least for 7 years to produce My Fair Lady. Not only because I consider it the greatest musical of all times, but also because through conversations with Tom, the late Tom Schleiss, we discovered that it was his favorite and my favorite too. And for various reasons, we always kept on postponing it, either because we didn't have the right cast. When we had the right cast, we didn't have the resources, or we didn't have a good designer that would fill the expectations, or X, Y, Z reasons. And since this year would have been Tom Schleiss's 25th year as principal coach and general manager of the opera program, I decided that we needed to do it, no matter what. I wanted to surprise him, and instead he surprised us all.
For those who don't know this, for passing away quite a bit prematurely.
Yes. Unfortunately, I've lost several friends in the last couple of years. Two of them were Daniel Catán and then Tom Schleiss, and then a composer, Alfonso Acuña, and more recently, Mark Cammons, the man who was responsible for the discovery of U2, Madonna, and so forth. I mean, great musical personalities that influenced my life. So, but anyway, I'm getting off the track. Let's go back to how the season came into being. It's obvious for everyone that the financial situation that not only here in America, but throughout the world, is devastating opera companies, symphonic organizations, philanthropic efforts are being crashed. And I think that we cannot follow that road, even though we have been pushed by the circumstances. So suddenly, since I decided to go with the first musical, South Pacific, a few years ago, the box office was the best we've had so far. So I said, okay, we need to do more musicals. I know that there's a lot of controversy surrounding why an opera program is doing musicals. Well, I have three good reasons. The main one for me is that musical theater is a genuine American art form. And I've always believed in being coherent with the country I am living at and to promote the art that is being produced in that specific country, be it Spain, Mexico, Argentina, Uruguay, Venezuela, all the countries that I've lived in. So I don't find it by any ways demeaning to promote tango or Astor Piazzolla or to promote zarzuelas, just as I don't consider it a lesser art form to promote musicals. Now, there are musicals and there are musicals, but it's the very same as in symphonies. There are symphonies and there are symphonies, right? So, I mean, I guess that the trick there is to really have a sense of what is quality-wise excellent and what will convey in a very highly artistic level not only a musical message or a compelling story, but works that teaches something, that leaves in our hearts, minds, and souls some sort of lesson about human behavior. So certainly, My Fair Lady does all of that. And so, and then I started to think that since we came with the idea of having a fully staged production for the third slot way back in 2006, and I've been pushing very hard to keep that going on, we don't have a full symphony orchestra for that. So we always go for the New Music Ensemble as our pit orchestra, or the Baroque Ensemble, that Concerto Urbano, that is conducted by Charlotte Maddox. So this was the year to continue with a modern piece, and suddenly, just like that, out of the blue, it popped into my head that Three Penny would be the perfect balance, because for the first time since I arrived here, all three works have been conceived in the 20th century, and each one represents a unique epoch of the 20th century. One at the very beginning, 1912, like Florencia was composed actually in 1996, but it goes back to the mid-20s. Then the Three Penny Opera, also in the 20s, but reflects that era, and then My Fair Lady, the beginning of the century. And each of these works were composed at different times, Three Penny in the mid-20s, My Fair Lady in the 50s, and Catan's Florencia in the 90s. So I think that I could present to our audiences and to our students a very well-balanced horizon of what had been done by different composers in different styles in our last century. And most of us were born there in the 20th century. So to me, it suddenly just made click. And of course, when I shared this with the late Thomas Schleiss, he was very, very happy about those findings.
So. And so there's a whole season dedicated to his memory.
Yes, and the whole season is dedicated to him.
We're talking with Eduardo Diaz-Munoz, artistic director of the opera program at the University of Illinois School of Music. They're presenting My Fair Lady starting Thursday and running through Sunday at the Kranert Center in Urbana. And we have a bunch of music we want to showcase from it. Why don't we start off with whatever we're going to start off with, which is what?
I could have danced all night. Well, I could... But I don't know if she would.
She, in this case, is Kristen Colvin, who is half of the double cast in the role of Eliza Doolittle. Wendy Muir is the other. We'll hear her coming up. And we have at the orchestral piano here, Kara Chowning, who is, has been on this show a number of times playing in various settings. She's also principal coach, assistant conductor, and course master for this production.
To name just a few of her roles.
And people will know this music.
Bed, bed, I couldn't go to bed. My head's too light to try to set it down. Sleep, sleep, I couldn't sleep tonight. Not for all the jewels in the crown. I could have danced all night, I could have danced all night, and still have begged for more. I could have spread my wings and done a thousand things I've never done before. I'll never know what made it so exciting. Why all at once my heart took flight? I only know when he began to dance with me. I could have danced, danced all night.
She ought to be in bed.
I could have danced all night.
You must be dead. Your face is troubled. Your eyes are red.
And still
now say goodnight. Please turn on the light. Please, it's really time for you to be in bed.
Do as
told. Oh, Mrs. Pierce, the scepter's cold. Too late, miss.
Kristen Colvin in the role of Eliza Doolittle with Kara Chowning at the piano. And in the background, in other couple of roles, Kara herself and Eduardo Diaz Munoz. Live on Live and Local. What's that?
They have to be two maids, though. I see. We don't have him. There was a maid and the butler.
So this is, we call this sort of blind casting, right? Programming today on FM 90.9 is made possible by Krannert Art Museum, presenting a Sudden Sound concert this Thursday at 7:30 in Krannert Art Museum's Noel Gallery, featuring Douglas R. Ewart and Wadada Leo Smith, presenting music drawing upon their work in the traditions of the African diaspora. And it's at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts that My Fair Lady will be taking place this week, Thursday through Sunday. Evening performances Thursday through Saturday with a Sunday matinee. And Ricardo Herrera is the stage director. And some questions that sort of arise about the notion of doing a Broadway musical, essentially, or a musical theater in an opera program. And one of those is how you handle the voice, if at all different from opera, because back in the day when people like Julie Andrews were singing musicals, they had different voices than people who do Broadway today. I have my own very strong opinions of the differences between those. But I'm curious, from your point of view, and for that matter from Kara's as coach and instructor of some of these singers, do you approach it any differently than you approach opera, or how do you deal with it?
Well, the good thing about this musical, one of the many good things about this musical, is that it was written with good singers in mind, with good voices in mind. In the 1950s, we were not depending so much yet on technology. We were still using our instrument more like we do in the opera field. It doesn't mean that we cannot use technology. Actually, we are going to be using technology in our performance. This being a semi-staged and concert version, we'll have the orchestra on stage. So they will not be in the pit. They will be very exposed in terms of sound. And when that happens on stage, you have to rely also on your projection, on the natural gift that you were given in your instrument and what you've been polishing through your voice lessons. So you have to project. But sometimes, a dialogue cannot be shouted. So if you have to project on top of the orchestra, then that's where we have our friends in the sound department to help us with a little bit of technology.
In other words, to assist. With microphones.
With microphones. Yeah. With microphones. We still want to make sure that it is an acoustical, quote-unquote, presentation so that we don't sound like a rock concert. It's not going to be that kind of amplification. It's still as acoustical as possible. But the training of our singers continue to be with the thought in mind that you need to rely on your own acoustical development. So some of the notes that we've been giving our singers, yes, go ahead and keep projecting. Project your voice when you have your dialogues. Use a different intonation so that the words will not disappear in the midst of all the noise that is going around you. Make sure that the intonation is correct and the pronunciation is accurate so that the audience gets the words and the fun of the message. When you go and put together with the orchestra, then you sing out as if you're doing an aria. However, you don't open up as much. You don't overemphasize, the richness of the vowels like we do in opera, except for one moment when Timothy Renner makes fun of a Wagnerian singer, and he actually opens up all of a sudden into this baritone sound that he has. So it's really a very cute moment, and it makes a big impression on the, not only on the audience, but also on the cast. I mean, some of the cast members are not singers by training, they're actors. And, when it's just like for us singers, when we see ballet dancers come in and work, I mean, we're so amazed at how they control their bodies, and they're just walking, and they go, what is the big deal with that? So, well, just the way you walk is amazing, how you have that poise. For actors or for dancers, when we singers start vocalizing and open up our sounds, it's like, whoa, I didn't know you could do that. So it's a beautiful thing to share with everybody in the cast. I think the musical lends itself very nicely to continue the vocal production, the vocal training that we promote at U of I.
Well, you sort of raised another question in what you said about singers versus actors. Rex Harrison as Henry Higgins would not have been able to open up, as you just described, Timothy Dunn, because he pretty famously speaks much of what he, you know, would speak what much of what he was written to sing.
Right.
Of course, he created the role for this. And there's the question of how much can people who are trained as singers be expected to act properly? Mm-hmm. And then you have people who are trained as actors who are being asked to sing.
Right. Well, this is an eternal question, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been going on since I remember.
I mean, all one has to do is go to your average professional opera, and there's at least half the answer
there's
to the question.
Example. Yeah, there's the example that we're talking about. The goal, I mean, we still look, we strive for the goal, and the goal is to have the best balanced artist in terms of voice, movement, and acting. We train our singers as much as possible in those three fields. There's a lot of years that have to come into place in order to make sure that they master all three fields, but we still go for that. As a matter of fact, we're designing a musical theater program at U of I, so with that in mind, you know, so that the singer or the artist comes here and is trained in all three fields as much as possible. So when they go out in the world, in the musical theater world, they are able to act, they're able to sing, and they're able to dance. Now, does that mean that the opera singers shouldn't do that? No. It means exactly that the opera singer is also expected nowadays to do the same thing. And I've done many productions where they ask me to dance things that I've never thought I could even do, you know, and control my body in the way dancers do. And it's expected more and more also from opera singers. So I think we're in the right path to create this kind of opportunities for our young singers at U of I.
And of course, My Fair Lady, a wonderful vehicle for doing that. Let's have another song from the show, On the Street Where You Live. Is that next? Are we taking things in the order I've got them written down? This role of Freddie Eynsford Hill, the name tells you about all you need to know about the character, I suppose, is double cast as our... at least one of the as Eliza Doodle. We only have one of the actors here with us. Griffin Candy is not with us, and Benjamin Crumrig is. So he'll be doing this song, which is sung. It's one of the most wonderful songs out of many wonderful songs in the show. It's just too bad the character is so annoying. Not a reflection on how you play it, since I've never seen you play it.
I hope not.
When she mentioned how her aunt bit off the spoon, she completely done me in, and my heart went on her journey to the moon. When she told about her father and the gin, and I never saw a more enchanting farce than the moment when she shouted, "Move your bloomin'."
Yes, sir.
Is Miss Doolittle at home?
Whom shall I say is calling?
Freddie Eynsford Hill. If she doesn't remember me, tell her I'm the chap who is sniggering at her.
Yes, sir.
And would you give her these?
Yes, sir.
You needn't rush. I want to drink in this street where she lives.
Yes, sir.
I have often walked down this street before, but the pavement always stayed beneath my feet before. All at once am I several stories high, knowing I'm on the street where you live. Are there lilac trees in the heart of town? Can you hear a lark in any other part of town? Does enchantment pour out of every door? No, it's just on the street where you live. And oh, the towering feeling, just to know somehow you are second you may suddenly appear. People stop and stare, they don't bother me, for there's nowhere else on earth that I would rather be. Let the time go by, I won't care if I can be here on the street where you live.
Nicely done. On the Street Where You Live from My Fair Lady. Sung here by Benjamin Crumrig in the role of Freddie Eynsford Hill. The role is double cast with Griffin Candy. And I was probably unfair to your character. I'm probably taking the point of view of Professor Henry Higgins in reference to your character who has not much good to say about poor Freddie. Go on and marry Freddie. I used to always want to sing that song on stage, with the one little problem that I didn't actually want to be on stage. Never wanted to be on stage, but I always wanted to sing that song back in the days when I could sing it all. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly, pleased to be bringing you songs from, I guess I'd have to say, my favorite musical too, My Fair Lady. I was involved many years ago with Champaign-Urbana Theater Company as the orchestra director before they more often combined that role into the music director, and it wasn't their best production, I have to say, and I've always wanted to do it again. It hasn't ever come up again. It's really great that the opera program at the University of Illinois is doing it. Well, you didn't ask. You didn't ask. Somebody's got the gig there, you know, at the University of Illinois. It's going to be held at the Krannert Center Thursday through Saturday, 7:30. Show and Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock, and so when you double cast, one person gets two of the shows and the other person gets the other two shows.
Correct.
I assume done this way as well. It's been, you know, this musical has been sort of famously called the perfect musical, and actually looked that up online yesterday. Why is My Fair Lady considered the perfect musical? And people weighed in. And what do you guys have to say about that? What makes it the perfect musical? Anybody.
Let's get started with the youngsters. I have my own opinion, but let's get started with them.
Yeah.
Well.
Or maybe you don't agree. You know, I don't know. Maybe that's an old person's point of view, older person's point of view. I don't know.
No, I do agree, and I think that part of it is it has everything that a person would want to see from a musical. It has this amazing combination of an incredible story and emotional plot line, as well as these beautiful chorus numbers that incorporate, or at least, you know, give the opportunity to incorporate some incredible dancing, as well as incredible music that we all at this point, you know, have grown up with and come to love. And so it's exciting to get to see, you know, the members of the company on stage getting to, you know, do all these multiple things and, you know, do it very well. I think that's what so often draws audiences to this musical, is just the combination of the triple threat that we all think about when we think about musical theater. It's every component is there and every component is outstanding. And I think that's why it's considered the perfect musical.
And by the way, that's Wendy Muir, who is the other Eliza Doolittle, who we're going to hear actually very shortly. Anybody else want to weigh in, or did she summarize it pretty well?
No, I think she did a pretty, good job.
Pretty well. Probably I will just like to add that the fact that when Gabriel Pascal acquired all the rights of Bernard Shaw's plays to produce them, he couldn't produce My Fair Lady, Pygmalion, until Bernard Shaw's death. Once he was gone, then he invited Alan J. Lerner and Fritz Lowe to work on it. And they couldn't do anything for a few years because they thought that according to the rules of those years, there was no love story, there were no ensemble numbers, and there was no subplot. basically, I mean, those were the rules in those years. So Alan J. Lerner started to rethink about it. 3 years later, they reunited after Gabriel Pascal passed away. It's funny how, you know, those mortuary events got people together. And they came up with very bright ideas of how to find solutions to make it work, because they did believe that Pygmalion was a wonderful story that needed to be told in spite of not having those three elements. So they created them, incorporating different actions and situations. And it just, it works.
So which are the parts of the plot? I've never read Pygmalion, so I don't know exactly. I don't know.
Well, basically,
which
did
were
the
plot elements that they added.
Action between certain scenes. Mm-hmm. Basically, I mean, to summarize it.
But all the characters that are in the musical are in the play?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All of them.
I mean, I'm thinking of a couple of, I mean, you have, of course, the main interaction between Eliza Doolittle and Professor Henry Higgins, and then you have Higgins' sidekick, Colonel Pickering. So that's not really a subplot. But then you have the little
Alfred.
Extra drama of her father.
Exactly.
You know?
Alfred P. Doolittle.
Get me to and the instead church
of,
on time.
And instead of being a drama, it's just the relaxing and funny moment.
Sheer comedy.
But he's a fantastic moralist.
Yeah.
I think the audience also, and besides what we heard already, all the elements of music, in the beautiful music in the play, in the show, and coming together with the story of the love story, I think audiences also like the fact that we're creating a sculpture in language. I mean, mm-hmm. Pygmalion is about a mm-hmm. sculpture, and here is this person refining the other person through language. And I think the American people and the English people, We love the language of our, you know, of our culture, and we like to shape it more and more, and we dwell on you know, pronunciation things, and it's fantastic. So when the whole point of the story is about somebody else's transformation through language, we go, yeah, I know, I believe, I am with you. I think it's very attractive to the audience also.
But I could also hear howls of protest from certain people, certain types of people who say, why does one have to speak a certain way in order to be considered refined or intelligent? And for that matter, can you really call it a love story when someone is treated the way Eliza is by somebody like Henry Higgins?
Correct. And I think that's why it attracts more people, because of the mere controversy. And I think, in my opinion, being you know, the 1912s, when it was written,
Now, when you say it was written, you're talking about Pygmalion.
The Pygmalion, yes, yeah. The story itself, and then you know the 1950s when the music was put together. I share this with Eduardo Diaz Munoz at one point, when I think art always informs our cultures and always informs our life, and sometimes in a bad way, but it does inform life, and I believe that Shaw also informed us about this change in culture and this change in society, mm-hmm. where the man-woman relationship was about to change for real, you know, of the oppression of one sex over the other one. And even though Higgins says, you know, why can't a woman be like a man in a derogatory way, he's actually in another way calling for the rights of women, saying, mm-hmm. Why can't a woman be like a man in this case? And in the play, we make fun of Higgins because he's, you know, he's just ending with, yeah, how can a woman be like me? Of course, it's in a playful way, but I think it's deeper than that. I think we're calling for the movement where women need to call for their own rights, and that's why it also is attractive to the audience.
Well, why don't we let Eliza call for her rights in this next song. We're doing Show Me Next, right?
Yes.
This is Wendy Muir as the other Eliza. We've heard Kristen Colvin already. And, looks like we have Freddie joining in, and of course Kara Chowning at the piano, live on Live and Local.
Speak, and the world is full of singing, and I am winging higher than the birds. Touch, and my heart begins to crumble. The heavens tumble, darling, and I.
What? words. I'm so sick of words. I get words all day through, first from him, now from you. Is that all you blighters can do? Don't talk of stars burning above. If you're in love, show me. Tell me no dreams filled with desire. If you're on fire, show me. Here we are together in the middle of the night. Don't talk of spring, just hold me tight. Anyone who's ever been in love will tell you that this is no time for a chat. Haven't your lips longed for my touch? Don't say how much. Show me, show me. Don't talk of love lasting through time. Make me no undying vow. Show me now. Sing me no song, read me no rhyme. Don't waste my time. Show me. Don't talk of June, don't talk of fall. Don't talk at all. Show me. Never do I ever want to hear another word. There isn't one I haven't heard. Here we are together in what ought to be a dream. Say one more word and I'll scream. Haven't your arms hungered for mine? Please now explain. Show me, show me. Don't wait until wrinkles and lines pop out all over my brow.
This music has an unending stream of fabulous songs. Exactly. There's not one bad song in this show.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Period. Composed, even the ones that are not as well known, you know.
Yeah, he composed hit after hit after hit, as I wrote in my welcome note.
Yeah. Wendy Muir in the role of Eliza Doodle, joined briefly at the beginning by Benjamin Crumrig in the role of Freddie Ainsworth Hill, and Kara Chowning at the piano. Kara is principal coach for this production, also assistant conductor and master of the chorus. And we heard the voice of Eduardo Diaz-Munoz, who's the artistic director of the opera program at the University of Illinois School of Music and will be conducting the production, of course. It's going to be semi-staged concert production, nonetheless, in the Festival Theater with the orchestra on stage, so that'll be kind of unusual. You get to actually see the workings of the orchestra.
Yeah, we came with that idea when we knew that we had little funding, like I said at the beginning of the program, that I was just determined to do it. So when I invited Ricardo to stage direct it for us, I told him, my idea is that the orchestra should be on stage, so you can have all the proscenium, all the... And he was like... But you don't need a stage director at all, then, if it's going to be a concert version. I said, no, it's going to be semi-staged. And then we started to discuss the idea, and we invited to collaborate Scott Bradley, who is also a graduate from the U of I, and he's a fantastic designer, and he has been traveling back and forth between New York and here. And he became enamored with the idea of having the orchestra on the stage, and we started to play with having the orchestra as being part of the scenery. Mm. And it's just fantastic. It looks great. Actually, many people have told me that it looks as if it was a fully staged production, but it's not.
just to be clear.
Just to make
about
sure
that.
So that people don't buy tickets thinking of, you know, but because when one thing My Fair Lady, we all have a certain image in our minds that it's lavish. I think that the picture just spoiled us all.
Yeah. That but you mean the film?
Yeah.
You say the picture. You mean
I said the picture.
Film,
no, yeah. The film. The sorry.
No,
yeah,
that's
the feature
fine.
Film.
I just want to make sure that we understand, because many people call them pictures.
Well, I was referring to the film.
Right, yeah. It's fine.
What was it? The 1964 film? Yeah. Something like that. Yeah, the one with Harrison and Hepburn.
Well, you know, one of the questions I wanted to ask, and I don't mean this in any sort of pejorative way at all, to, you know, since the people we've heard sing so far, but, you know, this musical, by virtue of the original Broadway production and the film, have three and probably three and a half really well-known actors, and by which I mean, of course, Rex Harrison, who played Higgins in both of them, Julie Andrews, who originated the production, Audrey Hepburn, who did half the job on the movie, and the thing that many people know but many people don't know, she didn't sing in the film, Marnie Nixon being the other half, you know, who was the vocals. How much are you guys influenced by those people? I mean, and on the other hand, how can you not be influenced by those people?
Well, I'll say that as Henry Higgins, I was a little bit intimidated going into it because obviously almost everyone who comes to see the show is going to have Rex Harrison in mind as he is Henry Higgins, you know. And so
literally
especially with the songs aspect of it, I had to figure out, you know, how much I was going to speak and how much I was going to sing. And I have certain things to offer as, you know, as Timothy Renner to the role, you know, especially vocally, that I feel like I want to contribute. And but yet, I've watched the movie a couple of times and just, you know, picked up little things from what Rex Harrison did. It's been very helpful, but still try to find my inner Henry Higgins, which has been easier at times, sometimes than others, but... it's been a challenge.
So as we learned earlier, some of the folks in the room are from the theater side at the University of Illinois. Some are from the voice side. Which side do you come from?
The opera.
You're on the opera side. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been a very stretching experience for me, especially by way of acting. It's acting in theater is really different from acting in opera. It's more real time. You know, opera things are so stretched out. And so I think I've grown as an artist myself as being part of this production.
But as has been pointed out many times about this particular musical, and one of the other reasons that it's such a good one is that the songs aren't just songs. They advance the plot, including your song, which we're about to have right now, so that you've set yourself up in comparison to Rex Harrison, so to speak. Timothy Renner is the voice you just heard. He's playing Professor Henry Higgins. And we have Wendy Muir joining in. And also, Fel, the other guy we haven't met yet, Rick E. Calk III in the role of Colonel Pickering.
A woman who utters such depressing and disgusting noises has no right to be anywhere, no right to live. Remember that you are a human being with a soul and the divine gift of articulate speech, that your native language is the language of Shakespeare and Milton and the Bible.
Quite right. Yes.
And don't sit there crooning like a bilious pigeon. Look at her, a prisoner of the gutters, condemned by every syllable she utters. By rights she should be taken out and hung for the cold-blooded murder of the English tongue. Now, heavens, what a noise! This is what the British population calls an elementary education.
Come, sir, I think you picked a poor example.
Did I? Hear them down in Soho Square, dropping H's everywhere, speaking English any way they like. You, sir, did you go to school?
What do you take me for, a fool?
No one taught him take instead of tyke. Here a Yorkshireman or worse, here a Cornishman converse. I'd rather hear a choir singing flat. Chickens cackling in a barn, just like this one.
Gone.
I ask you, sir, what sort of word is that? It's ow and gone that keep her in her place. Not her wretched clothes and dirty face. Why can't the English teach their children how to speak? This verbal class distinction by now should be antique. If you spoke as she does, sir, instead of the way you do, why, you might be selling flowers too.
I beg your pardon, sir.
An Englishman's way of speaking absolutely classifies him. The moment he talks, he makes some other Englishmen despise him. One common language I'm afraid we'll never get. Oh, why can't the English learn to set a good example to people whose English is painful to your ears? The Scotch and the Irish leave you close to tears. There even are places where English completely disappears. In in America, they haven't used it for years.
That's all of you. Why can't the English teach their children how to speak? Norwegians learn Norwegian, the Greeks are taught their Greek. In France, every Frenchman knows his language from A to Z. The French never care what they do, actually, as long as they pronounce it properly. Arabians learn Arabian with the speed of summer lightning. Hebrews learn it backwards, which is absolutely frightening. But use proper English or regard it as a freak. Why can't the English? Why can't the English learn to speak?
Well, I guess I only heard one Rex Harrisonism ism in there.
What was that?
I'm now trying to remember. Which is actually good that I can't remember. Timothy Renner in the role of Professor Henry Higgins. What is he a professor of, by the way?
Phonetics.
Yes, legitimate professor? I mean, he's...
I think he's more privately employed, I guess you can say. He takes on projects, at least in the example of Eliza. But he does make the point that it's his profession, but also his hobby. I mean, he lives, eats, sleeps, breathes what he does. He's all about phonetics, the science of speech.
And I guess one finds out by the end of the show just how well he does it, not only literally with the way she speaks, but then, of course, he does himself in, doesn't he, in a way? Hence the love story, one of the love stories in this role. These are actors from the University of Illinois School of Music opera program production of Alan J. Lerner and Frederick Lowe's My Fair Lady. Lerner having written the book and the lyrics, Lowe having written the music. Lowe was German by birth, wasn't he?
Yes.
It would have been Löwe, I think. I wonder how he managed to get himself involved in this American form of music and theater.
Well, he and his parents came to America when he was about 14, 15 years old.
Oh, pretty young. Okay.
Yeah, very young. Actually, I was doing some research. I discovered a few things about him that I was not aware of. He was the youngest piano soloist ever to perform with the Berlin Philharmonic when he was 13 years old. And his first songs were composed by the time he was 7. His dad, both his parents were Viennese, and his father was an operetta singer. And he used to accompany his father by ear, and that he would help him learn certain roles. And that's how he got involved in music. And when they came to America, he just started to get more serious about pursuing a career in music. And then he just landed being one of the most successful composers of musicals.
Yeah, and didn't he also write some art songs? Do I remember right or not? Am I misremembering it?
Different
person? That's an actual Löwe, not a Lowe. Okay, good. Thank you for straightening me out on that. Thank you from Kara Chowning.
Thank you.
Well, we have next, and we don't want to miss it, what is arguably the most famous song from this musical, out of many famous songs from this musical, which is to say, the Rhine and Spine is Mindly in the Pine. And we're going to feature both Elizas, Kristen Colvin and Wendy Muir, and also Timothy Renner is back as Higgins, and Rick E. Calk III as Colonel Pickering.
The Rhine in Spine stays mildly in the plain.
No, try it again.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
What was that?
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
Again.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
I think she's got it.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
By George, she's got it. By George, she's got it. Now once again, where does it rain?
On the plain.
as that soggy plain.
In Spain, in Spain.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain. The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain. In Hartford, Hereford, and Hampshire,
had a case hardly happened.
How kind of you to let me come.
How kind of you to let me come.
Now once again, where does it rain?
On the plain, on the plain.
And where's that blasted plain?
In Spain, in Spain.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
Yes.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
And it says here, cut the dance break. So we didn't, we don't, I wanted to see you guys dance.
Yeah, unfortunately,
I'm so disappointed.
Well, unfortunately, in radio, you would not be able to see what actually
you,
is happening.
Oh, you would sure hear it. It would just be, it would be awful.
Becky Nettlefuel is our choreographer.
Is she? Okay,
and
good.
She did a wonderful job throughout the whole show because there's a movement of dancing here, but also Doolittle dances. And then the whole chorus dances,
yeah, the whole chorus
and even maestro dance. Maestro Diaz Munoz also dances for 2.5 seconds.
Now, I was going to say that would be worth it about 2.5 seconds.
It is worth it.
Oh, it is.
Yes.
Well, certainly the whole show. I mean, My Fair Lady, fabulous production. I don't know what I just missed, but I just missed something in here. In any event, we heard Kristen Colvin and Wendy Muir in the role of Eliza Doolittle in that order, in that song. Timothy Renner as Henry Higgins and Rick Calk as Colonel Pickering. Kara Chelning has been our pianist. Yeah, sorry, I didn't give the whole name. Who is also a coach, assistant conductor, and course master for this. And Ricardo Herrera as the stage director. Eduardo Diaz Munoz is artistic and music director and principal conductor or actual conductor for this performance. It opens tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts.
The day after tomorrow.
What is today?
Today is
Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Oh, I keep thinking it's Wednesday. It opens Thursday.
That's
there you
right.
go.
Of course
you.
You're welcome to attend the invited dress tomorrow night.
I will be elsewhere. But thank you for the invitation for that. So Thursday night, 7:30. Friday night, 7:30. Saturday night, 7:30. Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. And you can get more information by going to krannertcenter.com. I want to say thanks to all of our participants for coming in today, reminding us all what a fabulous show this is. And break a leg.
Thank you
so much. Hope to see you there.
I would like to add just a little bit of luck. No, I'm kidding. Just a little bit of more information.
As long as you do it with the right accent.
Oh. A little bit of luck.
With a little bit of luck, right?
With. Yeah. With. Oh, yeah. He's the man.
Yeah,
we're obliged to have two dialect coaches. And Christine Sivek Johnson is one of them, who's a fine actress, magnificent person, a linguistic herself, and also our librarian, our dear old John Wagstaff, because he comes from Great Britain. And it's amazing how all of these guys have really made the change. Well, not Pickering and Rick and Timothy, but our Freddie Ainz will hear, but the rest, all the cast, and specifically our two Elizas, how they really managed the change from Cockney accent to a more refined British accent. And it's thanks to these two people who also embraced the project with passion, love, commitment. So thank you.
Yeah, and we almost also made him dance on stage, but that would have been too much. So what I did instead was, you know that cell phone announcement at the beginning of the Krannert performances?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that will be Christine and John announcing the cell phone, and it's already
fair
a beautiful
enough.
Thing.
Fair enough. Okay, so now you know who those voices are. Well, truly a large group collaboration, as every operatic production is.
Right. Right, like the saying goes, in team there is no I.
That's right. Should be swell. Thank you very much for joining
Thank
us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin.
Quick rundown of a few other things you can go see and hear live in our listening area tonight and into tomorrow. So we determined today is Tuesday, right?
Yes.
I want to give the right events. Edward Birch is going to be performing at Clark Bar in Champaign, singer-songwriter, tonight at 6:30. Larry Gray Trio of the University of Illinois Jazz Faculty going to be performing at the Iron Post in Urbana tonight at 7. You know, I'm not positive that that is accurate. I thought that was last week, but maybe it is. Illinois Wesleyan University Theater program presents As You Like It at the McPherson Theater on the Wesleyan campus in Bloomington tonight through Saturday at 8 o'clock with a Sunday matinee at 2 o'clock. An evening with Jonathan Richman, who's singer-songwriter and indie folk artist, as you prefer, at Canopy Club in Urbana tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. ISU Theater is presenting Oklahoma at the ISU Center for the Performing Arts in Normal. That is Wednesday through, I think, the weekend. Tomorrow night's performance at 7:30. And Eastern Illinois University Theater presenting the 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. It's the week for musicals at various universities around at the Downa Fine Arts Center in Charleston, Wednesday at 7:30, and that continues through the week as well. And the Celebration Company at the Station Theater in Urbana presenting the play Sons of the Prophet Wednesday at 8, and that runs through Sunday, and I think that continues perhaps into the next week as well. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. Tomorrow on the show, we'll be welcoming Chicago Farmer, who's a singer-songwriter. He's going to be at the Canopy Club in Urbana Thursday night. His real name, Cody Dekoff. We'll be hearing him live in the studio tomorrow. Our broadcast today is made possible in part by a grant from the Meredith Foundation, dedicated to supporting the musical arts in performance and presentation. You're listening to 90.9 WYL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music, and more for Central Illinois. We're a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. You can listen to us anytime online now. We do stream live at will.illinois.edu. We also archive this show at that same location. Stay tuned next for All Things Considered.